WYPR is here to keep you connected to your community. And as our communities change amid the coronavirus pandemic, that connection is more important than ever before. Member support makes it possible. And if you can, we hope you'll help us out. If you're a sustaining member, consider increasing your monthly pledge or become a new member with a first-time gift. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link. And thanks.
This is Anibon Basu with your Monday Morning Economic Report. In March, America was associated with more than 6.5 million available job openings, an all-time high. In April, the official rate of unemployment dipped below 4% for the first time since the year 2000. Despite all of these positive indications, wage growth has remained tepid. In April, average hourly earnings for private sector workers were up by slightly less than 2.6% on a year-ago basis. But as indicated by Wall Street Journal labor markets reporter Eric Morath, if one peers beneath the surface, there is evidence that wage pressures are building. While the pace of overall pay gains decelerated in recent months, hourly earnings for non-managers have quietly improved. In April, they matched their largest increase since 2010. Since late 2014, wage growth for managers had outstripped that of rank-and-file workers. This suggests that instead of sustaining broad labor market pressures, firms with rising stock valuations and solid profits were disproportionately rewarding leadership. But the recent uptick in non-manager wages suggests that low unemployment may finally be forcing businesses to bid up wages for all levels of employees. For WYPR and my esteemed producer, Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Tuesday Morning Economic Report. Many people fret about America's student debt crisis. There are approximately $1.4 trillion in student loans outstanding, and many people have fallen behind on their loan payments. But recently available data from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York indicate that the share of new delinquencies on student loans has declined to its lowest level in more than a decade. During this year's first quarter, slightly more than 9% of student debt outstanding was newly delinquent. That's down from nearly 12% 5 years ago. As indicated by writer Sarah Cheney, several factors are responsible for the decline in new delinquencies, including a strong job market and better wage growth for many. However, there's something else at work. More borrowers are using options to postpone payments or to reduce the amount they are required to pay each month. The first option is known as forbearance and permits borrowers to go months without making a payment while remaining in good standing on their debt. The second option, known as income-driven repayments, sets borrowers' monthly payments as a share of their income. Government reports indicate that the number of borrowers using these measures has risen sharply in recent years. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Wednesday Morning Economic Report. Earlier this year, plans to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum imports were announced. Specifically, the Trump administration announced plans to institute broad tariffs of 25% on steel and 10% on aluminum products in March. The notion behind such policymaking is that by rendering foreign steel and aluminum more expensive, domestic suppliers become more competitive, triggering more U.S.-based production and more job creation. But recently available data indicate that to date, these policies have failed to produce their desired results. As indicated by the Wall Street Journal, employment in each of America's top 10 steel cities, a group that includes places like Reading, Pennsylvania, Canton, Ohio, and Huntington, West Virginia, has grown more slowly than the rate of growth for the U.S. as a whole. Youngstown, Ohio actually saw its employment decline in February and in March relative to its year-ago level. The same was true for Pueblo, Colorado, Huntington, West Virginia, and Steubenville, Ohio. That said, the new tariffs have only recently been put in place, so the ultimate impact of these policies could not yet be completely known. For WYPR and my esteemed producer, Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Thursday Morning Economic Report. If you were born during the 1980s, you may want to turn down your volume for this one. Research from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis indicates that as of 2016, those born during the 1980s suffered levels of wealth 34% below where they would be absent the global financial crisis and its aftermath. By comparison, people born during the 1970s were associated with levels of wealth 18% below where they would have been, while those born during the 1960s were down 11%. In other words, those born during the 1980s were especially harmed by the Great Recession. This is not because they are necessarily bad people. This is because their timing is lousy. As indicated by writer Michael Derby, many people born during the 1980s began their working lives at a time of troubled investment markets, high unemployment, falling home prices, and persistently weak wage gains. Many in this generation are saddled with student debt, the result of paying lofty tuitions. The good news is that since this group is so highly educated relative to prior generations, their income and wealth trajectories stand to be steeper, allowing many of them to ultimately achieve their wealth goals. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Friday Morning Economic Report. While many are willing to relocate for technology jobs in large coastal cities, they tend not to be willing to relocate for other types of jobs or to other areas. This is the conclusion of a new study supplied by recruiting site Glassdoor. The six cities to which people are most willing to move are San Francisco, New York, San Jose, Los Angeles, Washington, and Boston. Here's the issue. Most jobs aren't in high-tech industries in coastal America. As indicated by writer Eric Morath, Labor Department data indicate that the highest rate of job openings is in the American Midwest, not on the East or West Coasts. The healthcare, hospitality, and retail sectors report the most severe worker shortages, and these industries are spread across the nation. Glassdoor indicates that more than 12% of all applications going to firms outside of a job seeker's own metropolitan area went to a firm in the San Francisco area. In other words, of all the people manifesting a willingness to move for work, about 1 in 8 applied for a job in San Francisco. By contrast, cities like St. Louis and Cincinnati received less than 0.5% of all out-of-town applications. This means that firms in these cities largely have to rely upon local populations to fill available jobs. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu.